Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Playlist Podcast, a weekly discussion of films and TV. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist. And this week, as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mike D'Angelo and Brian Farver. Are you guys ready to travel back in time to the 90s and talk about some action films?
Gotta go back in time.
Wrong decade. Wrong decade.
Oh, sorry.
90s. 90s. So this week we're going to talk about remakes, sequels, reboots, and all those other buzzwords that Hollywood studios love to throw around. We are inspired by the news that Adam Wingard has signed on to direct a sequel to the 1997 film Face Off, and we're going to go ahead and explain why that's a terrible idea and instead offer the studios – well, it is a bad idea. We'll get to that. But instead we're going to offer studios three of our own picks for 90s action films that they should remake or have sequels or reboots or whatever you want to call it. Because we know Hollywood's going to Hollywood, remakes are here to stay, but they don't always have to be bad. But before we take a trip down memory lane and talk about some pastel colors, bad CGI, and a young J-Lo, I got to tell you that the Playlist Podcast is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes The Discourse, Be Real, The Fourth Wall, and more. If you want to find us, you can check your podcast app of choice, whether that's Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find your favorite shows. Also, speaking of podcasts, this week is kind of like a de facto impromptu Nicolas Cage appreciation week for the Playlist Podcast. In addition to this show and Face Off, we spoke with Kevin Lewis from Willy's Wonderland, a new Nicolas Cage movie. So you can check that interview out in our feed as well. Really good interview, if I do say so myself.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear. Okay, guys. But before we talk about our own films that we want to get remade, let's actually talk about the news that inspired the episode. Last week, it was announced that Adam Wingard, who's probably best known for directing the upcoming Godzilla vs. Kong, but you really should know him from his earlier films, You're Next and The Guest, is signed on to direct a new Face-Off sequel that he's going to co-write with his frequent collaborator, Simon Barrett. Wingard confirmed this news on social media. He clarified that the film is not a remake and instead will be a sequel. And then Deadline added that they believe John Travolta and Nicolas Cage will not be returning for the film. So quickly, let's talk about why this is a bad idea. Mike.
Yes. What is the point without Nicolas Cage and John Travolta?
Yeah.
There's no frickin' point. I mean, the movie has such a 90s John Woo magic to it that I'm not sure it really makes sense to do it. But, you know, if Adam Wingard thinks he can make something out of it, then, you know, why not give him a shot?
Brian, can you eat a peach for hours?
Peach. I can eat a peach for hours.
That movie is insane. It's very much like a product of its time. You said it best, Mike. I mean, I mean, we can agree that Nick Cage would make a movie like that now, but
he should make a movie like that.
He should make a movie. Absolutely. I mean, like if he had never made Face Off in 1997 and just made it now, I mean, it would make sense. I would understand it, you know. But the combination of him and Travolta, that direction, it was perfect for when it was released. And I mean, I don't use the word untouchable very often, and it's certainly not the greatest movie of all time, but it's highly entertaining.
That's putting it mildly. Let's just put this out on the table. Face Off, to this day, 24 years later, is probably one of the most watchable movies in existence. You can start it at the beginning, the middle, right before the climax. It is fascinating. You have John Travolta playing Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage playing John Travolta. It's bonkers. And then you have John Woo, who couldn't make a boring movie if his life depended on it. Like, the guy just directs everything with this like frenetic pace. It's nuts.
And doves. So many doves.
So many doves.
But then you throw in this whole premise of Face Off, you know, and then you throw in there's like a prison with gravity boots. And it's just, there's so much going on in this movie, man, that it, you're right. It's just like, a sequel can be made, sure. I'm not going to say Adam Wingard shouldn't make whatever he has in his heart. Go do it. Especially because, you know, You're Next and The Guest are two of my favorite movies in like the last decade. So go for it. I have faith that these guys are good at what they do. I just don't know if you're not going to have John Travolta and Nicolas Cage come back. And granted, correct me if I'm wrong, Brian, you'll probably know this, but didn't Nicolas Cage's character die?
Yes. Yeah,
but does it matter in the world of
But that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it doesn't matter. So it thematically, sure, he shouldn't probably return. But the in our hearts.
The Return of Castor Troy.
Yeah, oh my God, there it is. Face Off 2, The Return of Castor Troy.
Please. Or it could be about his brother Pollux. It could be about Pollux Troy. I mean, he did have a brother in prison.
And, yeah, but didn't he die? Again, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. I guess just to wrap this up, because we want to talk about other fun movies, but I personally think that there's no point. It's a movie that just doesn't need a sequel or a remake.
No.
It's great. And
it was lightning in a bottle.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, all right. We're all in agreement. We are pessimistic about the outcome of a Face Off, to say the least. But, you know, go with God, Adam Wingard. Do your best. And, you know,
The second they say Nick Cage and John Travolta are back, is the time I turn around and say, now you have my attention.
Yes.
If they were to say that, I would literally put this at the top of my most anticipated list.
Absolutely.
And I would devote an entire website to the day-to-day progress of making Face Off 2.
But guys, we'll never ever get a scene, even if Nick Cage and John Travolta come back, we'll never get a scene even remotely akin to when Nicolas Cage is smoking a cigarette with his missing face and trying to talk. And like, it's just amazing acting that I still can't quite understand. And I don't want to.
Or the church choir scene.
The church choir. My God. Yes. It's so wrong and so terrible, but holy crap. It's just,
beautiful.
Face Off. If you haven't seen it, then definitely watch it. And then you will, even if you hate it, you'll agree with us that they should not touch it. And to be fair, it will always be there for us no matter what, even if they made 45 sequels. It's just the thought of it is distressing.
Yeah.
Okay. So now that we got that out of the way, let's offer some ideas about which films we believe are ripe for remaking. So for the listening audience, the three of us independently picked one film each that we believe will make a good remake, but there were some rules. One, it had to be from the 90s, obviously. Two, it can't be a beloved film that people would lose their shit over because that's no fun. You don't remake Face Off. You don't remake some movies. And three, it has to have a strong enough premise that it doesn't just feel like a run-of-the-mill action movie because the 90s were, full of some of those run-of-the-mill action movies that were just terrible.
I'm going to be honest. I thought you said pick a bad movie. So I purposely picked a movie that isn't very good.
Well, so here's the thing. I think that they're bad movies, but bad in a subjective way.
Right. They're entertainingly bad.
They're entertaining. Yeah. Because why remake a terrible movie? Remake a movie that had promise. That's all we're saying. And maybe the promise was unfulfilled.
Exactly.
So we're not just going to list movies. To make things a bit more interesting, each of us is going to also pick who we think should star in the movie and who should direct the movie. So I think it's best that we're probably going to go in chronological order, which means I go first because I'm choosing 1991's Double Impact, starring the one and only Jean-Claude Van Damme. Yes. For those unaware, Double Impact is the tale of two identical twin brothers, both played by Van Damme, who are torn apart after their parents are brutally murdered in Hong Kong, with one growing up in the U.S. as a pretty boy aerobics/karate instructor, while the other stayed in Hong Kong and became a badass cigar-chomping criminal. They have to team up, take on some big bad crime boss over the rights to a tunnel or some such. honestly, the story really doesn't matter. The real attraction is early 90s clothing and not one but two JCVDs in the lead roles. Before I get into why I think we should go back to Double Impact and remake it and my cast and all that, I want to ask you guys quickly if you have any thoughts on Double Impact. I'll start with Brian.
Honestly, I feel like Van Damme flirts with an odd amount of greatness in this film. And it's And I'm not just saying that, like, this is like the best of the worst movies that Jean-Claude Van Damme has done. I'm not saying that at all. I really feel like he's honestly trying, and it's really fun. Is it great? No, not at all. But it's really fun. What he tries to do with his dual roles to make them different is a study that every acting class should take in at some point.
Well, you mean slick back hair and a cigar?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the for those who haven't seen the movie, the big difference between Jean-Claude number one and Jean-Claude number two is one wears a trench coat and has slick back hair and a cigar, and the other wears pastels, short shorts, and doesn't have slick back hair. I think that's pretty much it. And the reason Jean-Claude kind of is like all in on this movie, I think, goes down to the point where he co-wrote this movie. So this is like his big follow-up to Bloodsport and Lionheart. Like, this was pre-Time Cop, which I know is one that we all love. So this is like, you know, Jean-Claude Van Damme really kind of being that Stallone-esque guy. So yeah, Mike, what do you think of Double Impact?
It's certainly not a good movie, but no, it's very entertaining. And that is someone who hasn't seen it until a couple of days ago. I'd never seen this movie. So there are a lot of things that I was running up against. The inheritance source of, you know, the money of it all. Like, how does a tunnel generate money and why are they after it? I don't understand the plot of this movie at all. But there was a lot of like early 90s schlock that had, you know, yeah, me kind of eating it up. So a lot of weird, like, over macho stuff that doesn't age well, but at the same time ages very well because it's so entertainingly bad. And what an ending, you know, that okay sign. It just works. Keep it simple.
And also, if you're a big Jean-Claude Van Damme fan like myself, you should know that Bolo Young is in this movie as well, who was also the kind of the big bad in Bloodsport. And their fight in Bloodsport is like iconic to a certain group of people, like, you know, that I'm part of. And in this movie, they do fight quite a bit, but it's not as great. So, but he's there, you know. Mm-hmm. So anyway, for my pitch, I'm not reinventing the wheel here. I think it's best to just go with what worked before. Hire one action star playing two roles. We're not going to find some like unknown twin duo. We're going with the Army Hammer thing. Not with Army Hammer.
But not with Army
Hammer. Not with Army Hammer.
Not these days.
No, no. So I think the premise can stay largely the same in that they probably won't fight over a tunnel, but, you know, it's this whole like twins being separated close to birth and being raised differently. You have to come together and kick ass. We are going to – what I want to do is to use my Double Impact as a way to introduce Americans to one of the best – like subgenres of action movies right now, which is the Indonesian action film.
Oh, I like where you're going with this.
Yeah. So for my lead, I'm hiring Joe Taslim.
Okay.
No, you were thinking Iko Uwais.
Yep, that he was one of my picks.
No. Joe Taslim. Here you go. If for those people listening, if that name doesn't ring any bells, then shame on you. But seriously, Taslim is about to break out in a big way because he's going to be Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat, which is a big movie that's coming. But really, what you should know him for is his role in The Raid, which was great. And I think he was in a Fast and Furious sequel. I don't know. But for me, the Joe Taslim that everybody needs to see is The Night Comes for Us. That is a movie that is one of the best action movies of the last few years. I absolutely adore that movie. So here's my pitch. The story is going to involve twins being separated at a young age, brought back together, obviously, except this time, it's not two Belgian guys in Hong Kong, because that shit didn't make sense.
That have to bend over backwards to explain their accent.
Yeah, because they're like, well, we took you out of Hong Kong, raised you in France, then to America. That's why you have a French accent inexplicably. We're skipping all that. Instead, it's going to be an Indonesian family torn apart, with Taslim playing one twin that's sent to live in the U.S. and the other who stays in Indonesia. There you go. Done. We don't even need anything else. Clean, simple. And here's the kicker. To direct my film, I'm reuniting Taslim with The Night Comes for Us filmmaker Timo Taianto. Mm. Yes. This is going to be my excuse to make them work together because I want them to work together again after The Night Comes for Us. And also, it's again, I'm trying to introduce a huge audience to what folks are doing in Indonesia, which arguably is doing the John Wick-esque action, but better, and have been doing it years before Keanu Reeves was thinking about it. So
you don't want Gareth Evans?
No.
Oh,
no. here's the thing. I want it to be like pure Indonesian art.
Okay. I got you.
No Gareth Evans. He did The Raid. I'm not trying to get him to come back and try to do something. I want everybody to see Timo because he's great. Anyway, so Mike, I'll throw it to you. What do you think of my pitch?
I like it. It needs to be simple. Like, I agree with you in that. It needs to be like a John Wick revenge story with twins. Like, they killed their parents. There doesn't need to be this weird tunnel thing going on.
Hong Kong politics of the 60s? No.
Exactly. Yeah. Keep it as simple as possible. Make it a straightforward revenge story that everyone can understand and kind of put their arms around, and you're gold. I did have some casting ideas of myself. I really do like...
If you say Ryan Reynolds, you're fired.
Oh, damn it. There
goes. Where are you going to?
I was going to say Iko.
Yeah.
But he was my third choice. The first choice was Andrew Koji from Warrior, who is really impressive.
Joe Taslim is in Warrior as well.
Exactly. But Andrew just blew me away in Warrior, and I've really, really enjoyed that first season. I haven't watched the second yet. But otherwise, if you were going to go with like an American actor, I am partial to certain actors. Frank Grillo popped to my head.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of options.
So here's my thought process before I kick it to you, Brian. My thought process for Joe Taslim is his English is really good, by the way. And so he can play that. I'm sorry.
Same with Andrew, I'm telling
you. Well, yeah, of course. But I'm just saying that he can play that kind of American guy, but then also play the Indonesian version.
Absolutely.
So it's not just Jean-Claude Van Damme faking like he's from Hong Kong with a Belgian accent. It's just crazy. And also, I was thinking, the first thought that went in my head, why I said Ryan Reynolds, is I think if Hollywood were casting this movie, they're like, Ryan Reynolds, he can play kind of serious guy and funny guy. Right. And I cringe at thinking of what that movie would be. I also had in my head Chris Hemsworth, because I think he has the charisma to perhaps be like the Jean-Claude Van Damme sort of guy, right? Yeah. Where he can just
kind of
be over
the top. If you're going to set it in Indonesia or Hong Kong, wherever it is, why don't you just use someone like Andrew or Iko or Joe?
Guys who can really
fight.
You know, like, I want the action to take center stage, not the story. The story's kind of lame, other than it's twins, and that's pretty fun. But yeah, I want this to be an action showcase for sure. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, I like the setting, and honestly, I thought you were going to say Tom Hardy for a second, and this would be this would be taking place in a world where he had not done a movie called Legend. But I feel like that is an awful, dreadful experience of a film, Legend is. But I feel like he could bring the right amount of difference to the two roles. We know he can.
He's a great actor.
He's a great actor. We know he can fight. So yeah, I Tom Hardy or someone along those lines. I don't know who, but Mike's point about using someone from that in that setting, that environment, is hard to argue with. So.
Yeah, I kept thinking about American actors or British actors, and I kept coming back to like, what's the point of having them separated if one is like an Asian, one's the U.S.
Exactly,
and then hiring a white guy. It just didn't make sense to me. Otherwise, you're going to have like maybe one from Europe and one from the U.S. And then why do they know kung fu and martial arts? That just doesn't make sense. So yeah, I just.
Yeah, that's another thing that is only slightly explained in Double Impact. One guy is very clearly martial arts trained. Yeah, the other guy just happens to know the same kind of style.
You know, they missed an opportunity to have two different types of fighting styles, for sure.
Yeah, they really did.
And
but it's Jean-Claude. He has to do his thing.
And he co-wrote the movie, so I get it. He just had to do the splits, and he had to, you know, feel up women and wear short shorts, and, you know, hey.
And get his dick wrapped in silk boxers. For some reason?
Yes. And then explain that he has a huge wang. For those who haven't seen the movie, I don't recommend watching it. I'm sorry, Mike. I thought you had already seen the movie, but there's a lot of like misogynistic things in this movie that don't age well at all.
Very
it was
much.
Clearly written by a guy who thinks he's the hottest shit ever. So,
What year was that again that it came out?
1991.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, and it very much feels like that. A lot of pastel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I also wanted to mention some of the directors, because obviously the actor thing, I think, was just kind of a gimme. But I did think of Adam Wingard for this, believe it or not. Maybe I have him on my brain. But then also I was thinking of, because I wanted to go crazy, I was thinking of the Daniels.
Oh.
Yeah. From Swiss Army Man.
Ooh. Yeah.
Because I think they could have had a lot of fun with it. And then I just started thinking about, you know, some directors who are good at action, and I didn't want to think of the John Wick guys, so I went Sam Hargrave from Extraction, underrated sort of movie from last year, and then Carrie Mernion and Jonathan Millett from Becky, which is a movie
that was entertaining, yeah,
and I thought that they could bring that sort of like silly humor and action to it, but I ultimately went with Timo because I think he's great, and that's what I want to do. Okay.
Yeah, but screw Gareth Evans, apparently. You don't know, he doesn't exist anymore. So
he made the Raid already. Give me on. He's conquered action. We can move on. Okay, so next, chronologically, believe it or not, Mike and Brian independently picked two 1995 movies. Mm-hmm. It just happens.
Great year for schlock.
Great year for schlock.
It really was.
Mike's came out 4 months prior to Brian. So we're going to go to Mike now. Take it away. Explain what you chose and why.
Yeah, so I chose the amazing Denzel Washington vehicle Virtuosity. Yes, that applause.
That's a clap from Brian.
That is me.
Not a clap from me.
So for those who haven't sat through this 1995 just atrocious film, but in an entertaining way, it's about a former cop named Parker Barnes, which is a fantastic movie name, played by Denzel Washington, who is basically imprisoned for murdering a serial killer who blew up his family. And then it's kind of convoluted. He's recruited as an inmate to test out this virtual reality program that tests artificial intelligence. And he meets this artificial intelligence named Sid 6.7, who's played by Russell Crowe, with some super cheese. And basically, Sid has been modeled on hundreds of different deranged criminals, including the one that killed his family. So with some help of, you know, a lot of 90s technology magic, Sid escapes into the real world, and Parker is recruited to help take him down. And it's about as ridiculous as it sounds.
It's more ridiculous than it sounds. Yeah.
Russell Crowe is so over the top, and the effects are terrible, but it's still got this charm to it. Maybe it's because I grew up watching, like, 90s crappy sci-fi movies that I'm really charmed by it, but it's fun. It's fun to watch. What about you guys? What do you think?
I don't know why when you said the effects are terrible. I don't know why that's so funny, because they were they terrible even at that time as well?
Yes. I remember thinking they were bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely have a history with this film, and I can still step outside of myself and acknowledge that it hasn't aged well at all. It's not great, but I don't know. There's something really kind of charming about it. I feel like even the supporting characters are doing things with their roles, like the guy who brings Russell Crowe's bad guy into the real world, even he is like doing something that I find compelling. I don't know.
Compelling is a generous word.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that's the guy.
He's basically twirling his mustache the whole time.
Yes. Yes.
And I believe that's the same guy from The Mummy, if I remember correctly. Or Deep Rising. I don't know. Maybe the same guy. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I find Virtuosity to be incredibly fun, and I will hand all of the praise to Russell Xavier Crowe. I don't think that's his middle name.
It's not, but
it's he is definitely not.
It's great. His movie.
He is great.
I tend to fall on the it's really bad but sometimes okay side of things. Mm-hmm. The special
but
effects
always
are
entertaining.
Terrible. It is. Yeah. Well, so there's a lot going on in this movie, kind of every frame. So you got to mention Denzel Washington, right? Denzel Washington is in his own world in this movie. He's playing this as straight as they come. He is playing this as if his Oscar is depending on it. And you then have that.
This is the bone collector before the bone collector.
Yeah.
Ooh, good it drop. Really
is. This is like, this is at his prime Denzel, like literally, like he's ripped in this movie, like physically, and he is acting his heart out. But then you have Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe is basically like Mark Hamill's Joker. He is like cackling and he's just all over the place. At one point, he literally does a symphony of screams.
Oh, what is that scene all about? That scene
what
is
a jam
nuts.
Session.
Wow.
It's crazy. But so I just think that the premise is very 90s. This is I think Mike mentioned this off camera. I didn't realize this, the same director who did Lawnmower Man. So it's right up there with Lawnmower Man, with like VR is gonna blow your mind, man.
He had a real thing for VR.
Yeah, they really loved VR back then. And now people just use it to make fun of their parents and do fail videos. But regardless, this movie's crazy, and I would love, Mike, for you to now tell me how you're going to redeem this in 2020.
I'm excited too.
Yeah. So
yeah.
The problem with the original, in my view, is that it's a movie that has nothing to say. It's just there for pure entertainment, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just I like my sci-fi movies to have a little something, a little meat on the bone. That's why, you know, people kind of go back to Paul Verhoeven movies and stuff like that. I'd love to see what a Verhoeven movie would look like in the modern time with a movie like Virtuosity. So it'd be kind of like this modern sci-fi film that has this Verhoeven tone that is, you know, able to be over the top and silly, but can also make the effects work. But I'd like it to have a through line and a heart to it that comments on current racial tensions in America. So instead of a private program to measure artificial intelligence, he's forced into a government-funded and compromised AI-assisted study that's basically been directed to find certain races are more prone to violence and perhaps used for nefarious purposes down the line. Which, you know, racist government, hey, that's a far-fetched thing. But
there's actually racism in this movie, though.
Yes,
like,
there
like
is.
Like, Denzel fights a neo-Nazi.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
So instead of it being, like, serial killers put into Sid 6.7, I'm just going to make it, like, one cop, you know, was trying to change the system from the inside. As a police officer, he was set up by his colleagues to kind of take the fall for a murder of an unarmed teen. The other is this kind of amalgamation of black inmates that were forced into this study and have been betrayed by the system over and over and over again and manipulated to become more violent by these scientists, you know, in the AI version that created, you know, Sid. So one represents kind of this untethered, manipulated black rage, and the other represents someone who believes in the system and uses the system, and it's kind of about the war between those two viewpoints. So I don't really want Sid to be just evil for evil's sake like Russell Crowe was. He was fun, but and you can be fun, but you have to, you know, understand why even this amalgamated version of him has shades of gray, and you have to feel for this ultimately weird amalgamation of people and inmates that have been forced into this and manipulated. So and I don't want to feed, you know, the audience spoon feed, you know, an answer to this debate. It's just one of those things where you kind of spark the thoughts, and you don't give them a hard and fast, like, this is the happy ending that happens. And yes, it can be over the top and a sci-fi action movie that still has like the VR and crazy sci-fi elements to it, but ultimately I think the more interesting part is what it's ultimately about. So yeah, cast wise, it just it felt wrong to not have John David Washington in the discussion. But
yep.
Yeah. I wouldn't cast him as his dad's role. I'd cast him as Sid.
Ooh, I like it.
Because
he plays a great over the top guy, as we've seen in Malcolm and Marie.
Yeah.
And Parker in my version would be probably Lakeith Stanfield, I'm leaning towards right now.
Oh, man. Oh,
and
man.
I really, there's only one director that I'd want to see do it, and that's Jordan Peele.
Yeah. So when you explain the premise, I'm like, this is Jordan Peele.
Yeah. So, Jordan, if you're listening, call me.
He's busy, but
Jordan, if you're listening, just take it. I don't care.
Wow. Yeah. I got to say, that's surprising, because you watch Virtuosity and there really isn't anything like that in this movie at all.
No.
So I'm all about it, Brian.
Thank you. That's incredibly deep. I mean, Virtuosity is just a movie that starts, you know, continues and ends at some point. So That's all it is. It's you know, it may be kind of fun, but it's like a piece of candy. You'll forget about it a short while later. So that is a movie I would love to see, especially with that cast. That is some pretty excellent casting.
I mean, if you're going to fantasy cast, you might as well pick who you'd really want, right?
No, for sure. For sure. Will it still have the crazy music?
God, I hope so.
The opening scene, the music is like some weird like jazz thing. I don't know. It's crazy.
is that when he's in the first VR environment?
Yeah. When he's wearing his purple like space like cop suit, whatever the hell it is.
That's right.
I thought you were talking about the Scream Symphony, and that has to be a scene that's
on. Oh, yeah. Come on. Just the gun to people's heads. Scream. I need it louder.
Yeah. Oh,
so such strange. A great scene. Russell Crowe. Man, and I think you have to bring Russell Crowe back for something, just as a like an attaboy.
If he'll
like,
do it, if he'll do it,
if he'll
I'd bring him back as the president. If it was my choice.
You are forgetting something though. You said the movie doesn't really teach us anything. It does teach us one thing. If you're brought into the real world into a synthetic body and you lose an arm, just eat glass.
Yeah, glass.
And you'll be fine.
And your blood is going to be blue.
Your blood is okay. Can I just tell you guys, I used to, when I would brush my teeth sometimes when I was that age, I would sometimes think, I feel kind of like Sid 6.7 right now. And that is a true story because it would come out of my mouth.
You were Sid 6.9, my friend.
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed. Ooh, that gave me chills.
I want to give.
That's Ryan great, though, Mike.
I want to give Brian a quick second to pitch this if he has it on him. I'm hitting him without sort of prep here, but to pull the veil back a little, you had originally thought of maybe doing Lawnmower Man for your pick.
Yes.
But Mike had already picked Virtuosity, and we thought there was maybe a bit too much overlap. Did you have a pitch or any idea for Lawnmower Man?
I definitely had worked out the casting.
Oh, tell me, who's Job?
Tom Hardy. That's Tom Hardy. 100%.
You love Tom Hardy.
Yes. And, I'm guessing for the Dr. Angelo character, that would be either Ralph Fiennes or Mark Strong. So
solid.
Yeah, that's, you know, you could go the Oculus Rift route with this one, but it's at the same time, I recognize that movie is so unbelievably dated.
Yeah.
That it's almost like unremake worthy. I mean, they obviously tried to make a sequel some years later that just. Director though, I don't know. I think just because it probably is not worthy of a remake. No, we won't be hiring anybody for that.
That's one of those things where we talked about Face Off not being remakeable just because it was such a a lightning in a bottle.
Yep.
Lawnmower Man is like Hackers in that it's such a movie of its time.
It is.
That you really there's no point because you either take it too seriously and lose kind of the silliness of it all, or it just is dumb.
Well, and I also want to say too that I legitimately like 100% would love to see Mike's version of Virtuosity.
Oh yeah, but
there's things about Virtuosity that also cement it to 1995. I mean, those effects obviously, but then like just the overall aesthetic of the film and the fact that they mention like emojis like 15 times throughout the movie. It's like,
well, there's the scene
and no one understood emojis.
No, right. Denzel says, somebody asked him, they're like, how do you know that Russell Crowe is going to be in the building? He's like, oh, because of the smiley face sign. And they're like, what? Right. They're like, they used to smile
with their emails.
Yes. That's the line.
That is the line. And when they said that, I immediately was brought back to that Katie Couric clip from the Today Show from that time when they're trying to explain the at symbol. It was just, you got to move past it. And I think, Mike, you hit the nail on the head with, you got to add some meat to the bone. Otherwise, it's just a terrible, terrible idea. Okay, Brian, now it's time for you to tell us what your 1995 movie was.
Yes, indeed. So I have chosen Money Train, which, much like the titular vehicle, came and went years. And really, this movie is essentially, you could say it's a White Men Can't Jump Part 2, but it's not.
Train and weird stuff going on.
Exactly. We've got Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson back together again. They work as subway transit police officers. Charlie. That's the Woody Harrelson character, is a compulsive gambler. and is swimming in debt. So there's that going on. There's the fact that actually Charlie is the adoptive brother of John. That's Wesley Snipes' character. So there's that element.
He's
that,
black and proud, right?
Black and proud. Yeah, that exactly. Boy. And they not only are competing for the affections of Grace, which is Jennifer Lopez, which I think was her first movie, I think. But might also they also have to deal with their boss, played by the disgraced Robert Blake. At his most Robert Blake, I would say.
Oh my God. Delectable in this movie.
He is. And Charlie figures out at some point, in maybe the first, maybe early second act, that the money train, which is this this independently operated subway car that goes to all the stops and collects money every day, he decides he's going to rob this thing and hatches a plan. And that's really, I mean,
no, you make it seem like he has a plan.
He doesn't really have, he does something to get on board the train. The movie should not be called Money Train now that I think about it.
It really shouldn't. I was going to say that as well.
No. Yeah, his idea, isn't it just to, well, this train has money on it. I need money.
Yeah.
Let's get the money.
And he starts piecing together little things that he can do, which honestly amounts to going down a ladder or going up a ladder and something. And then, I don't know. I have fond memories of this movie. I recognize that if I saw it now, I'd probably hate everything about it. So it's purely nostalgia. But I also recognize that not only is the chemistry great between the two leads, but I love the last scene, which is set on board the train. And I think it's just really fun. And Robert Blake. This is a Robert Blake movie. But what do you guys think about the 1995 box office bomb Money Train?
I'll let Mike take this first.
Yes.
Okay. I did rewatch this one this week as well.
Thank you.
And it's so many movies going on at once.
Oh, yeah.
One, it definitely shouldn't be called Money Train. They mention it in the beginning, and then he just decides to rob it in the end. And then there's these like four movies in the middle that have nothing to do with it. And it's just so much like the random Chris Cooper serial killer plotline has it literally
Torch
could be taken out of the movie.
Yes. Torch.
He kills female toll booth workers, and it makes the movie so dark at times that you're just like, what the hell is going on in this movie?
Yeah.
And then there's this romance element with Jennifer Lopez, who actually is really good in this movie. And isn't the two-dimensional like damsel in distress or just the girl they're fighting over. She is that, but there's a lot to her. So that was a pleasant surprise for me. But like you said, this is a Robert Blake movie in that every scene he ends up ending it with something like, and I'm going to take my three favorite lines here.
Oh, please.
Excuse me. At the end of the first scene, he goes, "We're going to tangle asses." And that is a line that is spoken in this movie. And then the next time he's angry at them, he finishes the conversation with, "I'll fuck you dead." So there's that.
And he's their boss.
He's their boss.
Could you imagine your boss saying he's going to fuck you dead? Oh my God.
I didn't even understand that he was their boss, to be honest. Like, I just thought he was a guy that really didn't like them.
Yelled a lot.
For whatever reason, and then called them into his office a lot to yell at them and swear at them in ways that I'd never heard before.
Did you have a third line?
The last of which is, "I will rip a hole in your throat, suck your heart out, and eat it."
You're talking to Charlie, correct?
Yes. It's such great acting and great writing.
His eyes are bugged out of his head all the time.
Yeah, he's on something. We can say
he's on something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is very much a product of the 90s. But yeah, go ahead, Charles.
This is when Brian mentioned that he was picking Money Train, I was perplexed. This is a movie where it's I don't have fond memories of Money Train. I just remember it as like what you said, Brian, the White Man Can't Jump Part 2, where they clearly were like, these guys are great together. Let's figure this out. And, you know, it's Woody Harrelson in straight 90s backwards hat Woody Harrelson mode, and Wesley Snipes just chewing scenery. And then, well, not as much as Robert Blake, obviously, but they're great together. But yeah, it's rough, man. They're brothers. And in the trailer, and this is a line that has stuck with me, where he says, you know, they talk about their brothers, and Woody Harrelson says, "Black and proud." And yeah. Oh my Lord, does that not age well? But but yeah, it's not a great movie by any stretch. I'm speechless, honestly.
Robert Blake will fuck you dead if you say something bad about
it. I'm so scared. Or, you know, I'll be lit on fire by torch.
Yeah.
Or hanging on the side of a building by some, Italian mob? I forget what they were.
Something it's like funny that. Because, like, those scenes of Charlie, like, in trouble, or, like, the scene when John Wesley Snipes goes to the strip club to, like, track down the, you know, the loan sharks or whatever. And, like, those scenes I know are supposed to be really gripping. And I just remember thinking, like, God, this is endless. Like, just get to some more train stuff. And haven't seen any train stuff yet. That's like drag.
It was built for Wesley Snipes to be, you know, doing his karate thing in those parts.
That's true.
Kicking
That's
guys right. through windows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Brian, let's hear your pitch.
Yeah, give us the gold.
Where are you bringing Money Train into the 21st century?
I recognized, because here's the thing. I've been on the Wikipedia for Money Train quite a few times over the years. And because I wanted to find out what happened to the Money Train. It turns out it's in a museum somewhere. Anyways.
Were you going to buy it or something?
I mean, I wasn't not going to buy it. But much like in the Boxcar Children where they bought the... Anyways. Oh, so I realized there's absolutely no way with how... You know, money is handled more, you know, digitally now, electronically. It's coinage and things like that is not the way to collect money as
Are you
often
pitching
these days.
Bitcoin train?
That I have your attention, let me bring up this PowerPoint. But so
GameStop train?
Yes. Ooh.
Okay. Go ahead.
I definitely feel like. We need to keep some of those premises in there or the plot lines in there. I mean, not all of them, but I would like to see, you know, Charlie's descent, you know, I'd like to see something done with that more. And I feel like someone who has shown me he can play really gritty, you know, down on his luck character who also can, you know, keep the adrenaline pumping would be Robert Pattinson.
Huh,
so, okay. And after seeing Good Time, I thought, you know, this guy, he can do just about anything as far as I'm concerned. So I would choose him.
Good Time.
Yes. And it's a large shoes to fill, Woody Harrelson.
I know. Yes. So he would be that character. There's not a whole lot more I would change. The romance angle, I would keep that. I don't have somebody for the Jennifer Lopez character because, quite frankly, it's not a terribly... I don't see it as a terribly difficult role. I think a lot of actresses can handle that pretty well. But
wow.
You know,
shots fired at Jennifer Lopez here.
Hey,
she brought charm to that character, my friend.
She wasn't quite Selena at the time, but yeah, she did well.
Yeah, she did. She's fine. She's totally fine. But I feel like we need somebody like maybe a Michael B. Jordan in the Wesley Snipes role. Somebody who's, you know, because obviously, like, even in Money Train, they were very much polar opposites. We need somebody a bit more suave. I feel like that Michael B. Jordan could handle that well. I would love to see Dean Norris as the Robert Blake character.
I love how you're like, I'm not going to cast Jennifer Lopez. Everybody can do it. But
yeah,
got to cast Robert Blake.
You got to touch that one.
Norris is great.
I think he could deliver those lines with just the right amount of intensity. And he just, even his face is so menacing sometimes that, and oddly enough, Dean Norris also in Lawnmower Man, but anyways,
it all comes back
to Lawnmower Man. But yeah. And again, this is not me trying to put down J-Lo or that role in particular. I just feel like let's focus on the heavy hitters here and those scenes where it's the three of them, Blake, Harrelson, Snipes, were ridiculous, but also pretty fun. Yeah, those lines you mentioned, Mike, are I don't know how you'd update those, but
you don't. You just shoot them.
Probably don't. But here's the thing. So obviously we're not going to have a movie about him, you know, robbing this train that's, I think in the movie, is running like all the time. The money train's always out there collecting funds from the different, you know, collection booths. So we can't have that anymore because that doesn't really exist anymore. Maybe it comes around once in a great while. And that, you know, kind of hatches, you know, Pattinson's plan. Maybe it's a once a year thing. Maybe the train comes around once a year to collect a really, really big sum of money. And that he has one shot at this. I don't know. Cause in the movie he had, in the original Money Train, he had one shot as well, but we need to make
but
it.
Really,
a little...
he had all the shots.
Yeah. He had the one shot on a Tuesday.
He did. Well, yes, yes. So I don't know. I that's the way I see it, is if we're going to call it Money Train and there's going to be an actual train that collects money, and that sort of transaction doesn't really occur these days, something like that. You could go the whole hacking funds route, but God, I keep going back to Live Free or Die Hard, and
yeah, no,
that wouldn't work.
No,
but director, I want it to be, I'd want it to be really fun. So I thought about, I can't pronounce their names, but the guys who did Bad Boys for Life, I thought that was really fun. Coming in second, and this would be more for the grittiness that I think we need in between the train sequences, I'd go with Neil Blomkamp. You know, give him like a smaller film like this, because, you know, so many of his films have a lot of grit to them. And
yeah, but where's like the fake alien or robot?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Michael B. Jordan was a robot the whole time.
Oh, you know, oddly.
And he says, I'm robot and proud.
Oh, boy.
Third choice would be Brad Peyton, even though I did not enjoy San Andreas or Rampage, but in the spirit,
I like San Andreas.
You're just doing it anyway.
Yeah, here, just get over here, Brad Peyton.
I love how you're realistic about this. You know, like, okay, this is not going to get like a Scorsese, so Brad Peyton, no. You're hired.
Yes, and I think we'd have to have some sort of a twist, quote unquote, at the end where maybe it's revealed that this is like a sequel, and Woody and Wesley show up like at the very end, like maybe. They have to stop the train at some point during the big, you know, chase scene where they've got the train. They're trying to get away. They have to stop the train and what are we going to do here? How do we get away from the cops who are chasing us right now? And then suddenly from out of the darkness in the tunnel, maybe we can help. And then these, there they are.
I'm just imagining. In the
there tunnel. They are.
I'm just imagining the scene in Avengers Infinity War where Cap's like out of the shadows by the train. Like coming up and the music swells and it's Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson.
Oh God, that gets my blood pumping. Oh man.
Jesus.
And then Woody says something like, you know, oh, the money may be different, but the train's all the same or something.
Stop it! Oh my God.
Oh, man.
Are you kidding? Oh my God. Wow. Okay. All right. I see no reason why this shouldn't be made now.
Oh boy. Brad Peyton, call me.
Yeah, yeah. my third choice pick, Brad Peyton. What else are you doing these days? Rampage 2?
Well, he does whatever The Rock wants, right? Like, exactly. I think he probably has like another Rock movie. He didn't do Skyscraper. That was somebody else, right?
That was somebody else. And
I assumed it was him.
Right now, who would be Torch? Because Torch would have to factor.
Would take the Torch role out.
Yeah, it makes remove no Torch. Sense.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Remove Torch.
Okay, goodbye, Torch.
And my pick for the Jennifer Lopez character is Aiza Gonzalez from Baby Driver.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say.
Oh, well, you didn't say it fast enough. She's my choice.
Okay, that's pretty solid.
Yeah.
I have different casting choices as well for the leads. If you want to hear,
please go.
If you want to go older version, I have Idris Elba and Bill Burr.
Oh,
or
that would
want to
be
go,
the funniest version for sure.
Yeah, it would be hilarious. Or you'd go Pete Davidson and Donald Glover for the young crowd.
I thought about Donald Glover. Yes, Glover would be
It would just be about smoking weed. It would be Weed Train.
Smoking weed. Oh, smoking maybe that's doobies. What it is. You change it from money to weed. Weed
Train. Really, it's just the train that we need. It doesn't matter what it's holding.
Oh boy.
The money train. Okay. Money train. I don't think Netflix is calling, Brian.
They're definitely not calling. That's not even a question here. Do you have any ideas for casting for this one, Charles?
No. Okay. I would sooner just have Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson back and just not even explain it and just have the same Kangol hat turned backwards for Harrelson and Wesley Snipes doing his crazy, because he's still great. He's still Wesley Snipes. He can still do the high kicks. Yes. And, you know, obviously you can't bring back Robert Blake, but Dean Norris was an inspired choice.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I think the only thing, the only way this actually gets made is with the two stars coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Money Train 2, Money Harder. Or Train Harder. I don't know.
This could be Rennie Harlan's big comeback. I mean, Rennie he was the king of the mid 90s action for a little bit. So
was he though?
Charles.
But he did enough of it to, he did a lot of mid 90s action, right?
That's true.
Maybe not the king of it, but
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyways, talked about Money Train. I think the wheels have fallen off, so to speak. let's wrap up here. Just to wrap up, Face Off, please don't do it. Adam Wingard, bring back Nick Cage, bring back John Travolta, bring back Pollux. Then we can talk. we instead would love Double Impact, Virtuosity, which would win Oscars, apparently.
Yeah. And...
I'm sorry I went too hard, guys.
No, that's great. And then,
that movie would start some real honest conversations, I feel like, as people are walking out. Yeah.
And I acknowledge I am the last person that should be pitching that, but that's the idea that came to me. So I had to.
I love the idea. I think I would actually, of the three movies, as much as I love my own choice, just for selfish reasons, because I love everybody involved, I think Virtuosity is actually the best pitch, and I didn't think that was going to be the case before.
I'll be expecting my trophy in the mail.
Yeah, right. And then Brian, where does this one go? Redbox? Do they still release movies?
I'm going to say maybe.
It makes definitely it to IMDb TV. It's an IMDb TV original.
It's going to be something like that.
What ended up happening is Quibi got it and then went out of business. And now the rights are all tangled like some asses. And now there's just no way they can make that movie.
I spit out my water. I did. I literally did it.
Okay, I'm going to be honest. I have the trailer for Virtuosity 2021 playing in my head right now. And it's so exciting. Gosh.
Yeah, that's where we end up. If you remake movies, I think is the moral of the story. If you remake movies, pick movies that aren't great and try your best to update them. Don't pick good movies like Face Off. And
yeah,
twins always make action movies better. VR is so cool even today. And I don't know what trains carry money anymore, but yeah.
And if you do remake Face Off, Adam Wingard, at least have a scene where Nicolas Cage, even if it just comes back for one scene, is inexplicably like having like a love scene with a peach for 10 minutes straight.
Or do the Call Me By Your Name.
Oh. Jesus, John.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Sweet. And with that, we're done. Like I said at the beginning, since you're talking about Nicolas Cage, we do have an interview with the director of Willy's Wonderland. So make sure you listen to that. That's some real batshit crazy Nicolas Cage. And thanks everybody. Thank you, Mike and Brian, for playing this little game with me. I think it was a lot of fun.
Let's do it again.
We will talk bad movies, I'm sure, more down the line. Thanks everybody.
Bye.
Bye.